is the Todd and Friends podcast.
I don't like to waffle on predictions. That doesn't mean I always hope I'm right.
Oh, what's he going to do? Oh, come on.
I'm with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Todd, I knew we'd agree on something here.
From the KWLM Sports Studio.
Time for the podcast once again today. I am your host, Todd Brigeth. The podcast is brought to you by our new sponsor, Granite Bank in Spicer and Cold Spring, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC. It's a Timberwolves Tuesday. Alan Horton joining us on the telephone via the Twin Cities. His game two is set for tonight at Target Center. And what a terrific game for the Timberwolves in game one, Alan. Really competitive, outstanding first quarter. And then the Wolves won every quarter after that on their way to a 25-point blowout. I certainly thought the Wolves would win, but I didn't see 25-point margin.
Yeah, that was impressive. And you mentioned that first quarter. Even though they lost that first quarter by 1 point, Royce O'Neal hit a three with like less than a second left to give the Suns that technically that quarter. But I really thought the Timberwolves set the tone in that opening 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they made a statement in that 12 minutes. And what the statement was, I think mostly to the Suns, was, hey, you remember those three games in the regular season? Those things don't mean a thing.
Yep.
This is Timberwolves basketball, not what you saw in the regular season. You know, there are lots of theories as to why those three games went as poorly as they did for the Wolves, but the bottom line is they moved on from that, they adjusted from that, and they played a really dominant game one. I thought they did really dominate this game. I think from a Suns perspective, you could say and you could argue that, hey, it was a four-point game midway through the third, and then we lost track of this thing on a 21-5 run that pushed the lead from 4 to 20, and then it was over. Mm. So they could kind of point to that six-minute stretch, but I would say that the Wolves had a double-digit lead for most of that first half, and then still maintained the lead and put their foot down in the third and fourth quarters. So I thought it was a really good performance, both offensively, defensively. We could break down the game like 27 different ways, and I think the Wolves win most of those categories. It was the glass. It was the shooting. It was the defense. It was in the paint. It was second chance points. It was points off of turnovers. A lot of different areas that the Wolves had a lot of success at.
I think it's changed a little bit. Obviously, the game has since the Chuck Daly era. But I always remember when he would say rebounds equals rings. I'm not sure it's quite as true as it was back in his day, but still incredibly important. And when you dominate 52-28 on the boards, it really does make a difference.
Yeah, I always remember those days, too, because that's what, we're roughly the same age, Todd. Yeah. That's what you grew up, and coaches would preach, hey, you control the glass, you control the game. And that's right along with what Chuck Daly was talking about.
Yeah.
Like, rebounding really mattered. It doesn't as much. I've looked at the numbers through the years, and, good rebounding teams, does that equate to really good teams? There is a stat that still says that, you have a really high chance. Most of the NBA champion teams have a plus one rebound differential per game or better. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get to that elite level and win a title, 9 times out of 10, you've got to have a good rebounding margin. That means you're out rebounding your opponents by an average of 1, 2, 3. The Wolves are right in that. They're in the top 5, or in the top 10, I should say, in rebound differential. They've been really good this year. But to come up with one of their best rebounding efforts, I think if you combined not only the domination on the glass overall, but the offensive rebounding too, which led to second chance points and points in the paint too, that those four areas really dominant by Minnesota, one of their best and most complete efforts of the entire season.
No doubt. And Gobert in particular. Nurkic can be a handful. He's a gigantic individual in there with soft hands, but he was really neutralized by Gobert.
He was. I thought Rudy just played exceptionally well and just was, he's really solid. And I talked about this in the broadcast in game one, is that, this is not the kind of series it looks like that, a bunch of people are going to average 30 points a game. You're not going to put up these monstrous numbers. Now, Kevin Durant did for Phoenix 31, and Ant did for Minnesota. But I think these other players, you look at Kat's scoreline. He had 19.7 rebounds, 4 assists. Those aren't huge individual numbers for him based on what he's put up throughout his course of the season, but those are really good numbers. Rudy Gobert, 14 points, 16 rebounds, no blocks. He's had better games statistically, but I would argue that he was just as impactful in this type of game, more impactful than maybe some of those games where he has put up bigger stats. So sometimes I don't think the stats are going to equal the importance and the role that those players play within in a game. Because, in playoff basketball, it's generally slowed down a little bit. There's generally not this rhythm of play where everybody's scoring at either end of the floor, and these games in the 130s to the 120s, that's not going to happen. And so it's, you know, performances, when you get 16 rebounds, that means a lot, you know, especially in a game like Game 1.
No doubt. And his ability to defend at multiple spots on the floor, it seemed like last year was a little more in the paint, but, man, he's out defending pick and rolls on the perimeter. He's extending. His lateral movement seems just really good.
Yeah, I mean, teams continue to try to attack him in isolation. They think even when you've got a scorer like Kevin Durant on the wing, and he's got Rudy on him. Rudy's the number two defender in the NBA this year in isolation. He's been so dominant out there, and teams think they have this advantage, and they flat out don't. They can't drive by him very well, and they're worried about him contesting from behind. And he's able to contest when you try to, you know, step back on him. He's so long, he can get out and contest those shots. So it's he's been dominant in that area. He's been really good against pick and rolls. Rudy has shown why he's, I think, going to be the four-time defensive player of the year. I think he's a lock to win this award later this week.
Yeah, quite a lengthy article on Gobert and how he's not everybody's favorite guy in the NBA sometimes, but that doesn't seem to bother him that much. You know, I mean, it almost inspires him to play better.
And I think you have to. I think you have to look at it that way. I talked to Rudy yesterday. He wasn't made available to the media, but I got a chance to sit down with him for 5 minutes, and we're going to play that interview on the broadcast tonight. And I asked him about the stuff he's done recently. He went on the J.J. Redick podcast, which is a very popular, the old man in the three, one of the top NBA podcasts. And then he had an article in the Players Tribune where he talked about kind of his journey. And then, of course, earlier this season, he released his documentary when we were in Washington, D.C., there was a showing at the French Embassy. He took anybody who wanted to come with the team or the organization, and so I took the opportunity to go. We bussed out to the French Embassy and watched his documentary for 60 to 90 minutes. I can't remember how long it was. Then a little Q&A afterwards. Really enlightening, and just he's been more open about talking about his journey because he does think that the perception of him is not accurate. A lot of people just think of the COVID issues, and I don't know, maybe it's the way it's tough to put your finger on why people don't like Rudy. Fans don't like him. Other players don't like him. I don't know if it's jealousy. I don't know if it's misunderstanding. I don't know if the way he carries himself on the floor, maybe. Is it his, you know, the fact that he's from France? I don't know that everybody from France is, you know, looked at a certain way. I hate to think that's the case, but whatever the reason, he continues to be voted most overrated, and players kind of go at him. He gets hit, I think, more than any player I've ever seen. Not in a dirty, cheap shot kind of way, but just through the course of a game. This dude gets hit more than I've ever seen any Wolves big man get hit before. He takes a beating each and every night, but it's been great to see Rudy kind of, I think, come out of his shell a little bit. You know, he spent some time in the he talked in the Players Tribune article about this, about being in that darkness retreat for 3 days, the same thing that Aaron Rodgers did a year ago. And while you don't maybe want to associate yourself with Aaron Rodgers on everything, but it was Aaron Rodgers who went to that place first, and then Rudy knew the owner as well, and really had a profound experience in there. And it kind of got him, I think, you know, more comfortable with where he's at in life, and he feels comfortable talking about this stuff. And it's really cool to see, because if you get it to spend any time with Rudy, and I think other players would realize this too if they ever took the time to talk to him, this is a really insightful guy who's got things to say, wants to make the world a better place, wants to be the best version of himself. I don't really think comes at people and, you know, instigates anything, you know, that he doesn't feel first came against him, you know, in his war with Draymond Green or anything like that. It's not like nobody else in the league has a problem with Draymond Green. So Rudy's a really interesting guy and is a really fun guy to root for once you get to know him.
Dovetailing to his teammate Mike Conley while they were at Utah, and now, of course, with the Timberwolves, and Ant telling reporters that Conley kind of talked to guys and said, look, this doesn't come around that often, that he hadn't been to the Western Conference Finals since he was 24. And I thought Ant would make some joke about his age at that point. He didn't really, but he didn't. Yeah. Now he's 36, so it's been a while. But that seemed to have impact on the guys. Don't take it for granted. It doesn't come along that often.
Yeah, no, and especially for even a guy like Ant, who is on this rise to superstardom and has been to the playoffs 3 straight years, it can all change in a heartbeat. It really can. Whether the team gets, you know, broken up at some point or someone goes down with an injury – You have to make the most of every opportunity, and I thought the Wolves did that in game one. They recognized the moment. They recognized that they hadn't really played that well down the stretch of the regular season. Got blown out in game 82, where you know, Phoenix just had more to play for than the Wolves did. I think that played a large role in it. Mm-hmm. I think the Wolves realized that they were already going to be playing Phoenix, because even if they won or lost, it was likely going to be a Suns. That was the most probable outcome of the final day. And so it was great to see them get a couple of days off, get back in the gym, get healthy, get right mentally and physically, and then get after it for three straight days of practice, which goes to tell you again how good Chris Finch and his staff are and how good this Timberwolves team is defending, especially when they have time to prepare. And then you get another couple of days. You make Phoenix sit in their hotel rooms for the last, 48 hours. They get a couple of practices in, but that's a long time to be on the road and wait for that second game. So it's as big as game one was, I think game two is even bigger. Mm-hmm. If the Wolves win this, teams that go up 2-0 at home, so they're the higher seed, they win 93% of the time. If you lose this game and it's 1-1, all of a sudden that percentage drops to 63%, more 50-50 chance. So it's just as big to win this second one as it is the first.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Boy, those are some stark numbers indeed. You know, Finch was asked about the team's depth on their roster and how rotations are shortened oftentimes in the postseason. And he said, we don't plan to do that because we have all these guys that can play. Did that hold true in game one? Did guys get the minutes that they normally do?
Well, I think what you saw was Kyle Anderson get hurt after 5 minutes and then had to leave the game with a hip injury. And so he's questionable for tonight, too. And we'll see if he's able to give it a go. But he's certainly part of that rotation. Once he was out, they basically went 7.5 because Monte Morris only played some spot minutes and then played the final 4 minutes of the game when it was out of hand. So Monte Morris was kind of the last man used. So they did go a little bit shorter. Jordan McLaughlin, who's been playing really well down the stretch, played the final 20 games of the season, put up some impressive numbers, and during that stretch he had the second-best plus-minus on the team behind Nikhil Alexander-Walker. So was contributing in a big way, but I think Jordan will probably be used maybe in some spot minutes if at the end of a quarter, something like that, or something goes haywire a little bit and you need a spark plug, you need to increase the pace, something like that. But what was great about that game one performance, it basically was seven players. And as I told Mike Anori after practice today, their associate head coach, mm-hmm. I'm like, it's kind of a misnomer to say the Wolves bench. These guys are bench. These guys are starters. Because when you bring in Naz Reid and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, those are essentially two more starters. Mm-hmm. And you're just rotating seven guys. And it doesn't matter really what combination the Wolves have on the floor. It was really successful. And that's when you know you have depth and you've got a good team. When you can just rotate those guys in, and you don't really think of, oh, the bench is in here now. Now the starters are out. No, it was all intertwined, and all those combinations where the coaching staff is just pulling the strings on who's lining up with who, those matchups and those lineups that they throw out there. It was impressive because the Wolves just it didn't really matter. Like I said, who was out there? It was effective almost up and down the lineup.
What adjustments will Phoenix make, do you think, to try and change the outcome of Saturday's game?
I think they've got to find a way to get Devin Booker going. I think that's kind of the prevailing thought from the Wolves' perspective is, Booker averages, 27 points a game. He only had 18 the other night. He was a minus 15 in his 38 minutes. I think he struggled with the physicality of the game a little bit, and that's something that Bradley Beal talked about after the game. He said, flat out, the Timberwolves just were the more aggressive team. They came out and had more of that desperation on their side. And Chris Finch always talks about this. The more desperate team usually wins. So Phoenix will come out and be a more desperate team in game two. I mean, they don't want to you never want to fall behind 0-2. So the Wolves have to find a way to match that. And I think the physicality of the game it affected Booker. I mean, 5 of 16 shooting. The playoffs are a different beast. And even though the refereeing was a little bit different after the All-Star break and things weren't called quite as much, Booker's used to playing a certain way, and this is a one-on-one type guy who he's so good creating his own shot. But it's different when defenders are allowed to get away with a little more contact, a little more, a little bump here and there for a jump shooter. That can spell, that's miss or make. If I bump you in the act of shooting and it's only marginal contact, and if it was called earlier in the season but not in the postseason, that's going to play a big role. So I think Phoenix is going to find different ways to kind of free up Devin Booker to try to get him going, because they need – you can't just rely on Kevin Durant, who I thought the Wolves did a really good job on defending, and he still had 31 points. I mean, they contested a lot of his shots, and still he finishes with 31, shot the ball efficiently. But they need a more balanced attack than just him.
31 doesn't kill you from Durant, right? I mean, if you're the Timberwolves, we'll take 31 from Durant if we can defend these others. Right.
Yeah, no. As long as nobody else is going off for more than 18, you're in great shape. And that's exactly what the Wolves did. I mean, they held them to 95 points, held the Suns to 44% shooting, 32% from deep. I mean, the Suns only had 16 assists. They had 15 turnovers. That's a spectacular ratio if you're the Timberwolves defense. So they got back to playing like the number one defense in the NBA, not the team that had three worst defensive outings against Phoenix in the regular season.
Who locked up Booker? Who had him defensively?
The initial matchup is Jaden McDaniels, but I always find it interesting. We talk a lot about matchups and who matches up with whom, but you know, I've never actually looked at the final, even kind of the matchup player tracking stuff you can get after the game. I don't know how accurate that is. Sometimes they have multiple people defending. You know, I guess technically two guys could defend a shot, the same shot, and get credit for it. But so often, I mean, offenses want to get the matchup they want against the defender. Defenses want to get their guy matched up against the other opponent, best player. So, like, McDaniels has been assigned to Booker. You know, how much times he actually guards him? I mean, with all the switching and all the pick and rolls and all the drag screens and flare screens and all this kind of stuff, you have to be able – sometimes you have to switch, sometimes you got to rotate, and sometimes you end up with a Rudy Gobert on Kevin Durant. That's how that happens. And I just thought the Wolves, from a whole overall macro perspective, just increased their intensity defensively. I just thought they were really good. You know, every five that was on the floor just I thought was really solid as opposed to what we saw in the regular season.
Was it Bradley Beal said something during the last game between the two teams of the regular season that, like, you guys don't really play that hard? Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah, he did. That was the opening quarter when the Suns blew out the Timberwolves 44-22 in the opening quarter. Yeah. Beal kind of barked at the Wolves bench, got into it with Chris Finch, and that's when Ant stepped up. And Ant referenced that after the game the other night. He said, you know, they came in and, give them credit, they just punked us. I mean, they just beat us. But Bradley Beal called us out, said we didn't try hard. And so Ant referenced that, and I have to think that kind of was on the front part of their brain heading into this game. And that oftentimes it can be something like that that motivates players. And that always scares me, especially when the crowd is chanting overrated at Kevin Durant when he's on the free throw line. I said this on the air. I'll never tell a fan how to behave or what to say or not say. But you might not want to go out there and poke a grizzly bear. Because Kevin Durant is the third leading scorer in NBA playoff history, behind a couple of guys by the name of Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson. So that's not a guy I want to poke. And even when Ant had it going and got into it jawing with KD and he was smiling, I almost feel like that's poking the bear a little bit. So, but if you can back it up, well, then it's all good. So the Wolves have to back things up tonight.
Alan, thanks so much. We'll be tuned in 6 o'clock, the pregame coverage tonight. Alan will be tuned in.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Alan Horton, voice of the Timberwolves on the Todd and Friends podcast. It's brought to you by Granite Bank and Spicer and Cold Spring. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Watch for future episodes of the Todd and Friends podcast at KWLM.com or on the air here at KWLM, 1340 AM and 96.3 FM.